Acorn to Oak, a tree podcast rooted in real stories and growing knowledge from soil to canopy. Welcome, Acorn to Oak. I'm Stephanie, and today we're kicking off our very first episode with a topic that is fun and comes up with homeowners. Which trees actually attract wildlife, and which ones don't really pull their weight? Today I'm joined by ISA certified arborists Simon, Matt, and Ash. They're going to help us decode the secret menu of wildlife-friendly trees, from the species that bring in birds, pollinators, and wildlife, and trees that don't. Hi, y'all. How are y'all doing today?
Hey, doing good.
Doing fantastic.
That was my word. I was going to use that word. I'm doing great, thanks.
We all don't have to have different words. So today we're going to talk about why wildlife-friendly trees matter. What are some of the benefits?
Who wants to go first?
We'll let you go first, Ash.
Some of the benefits of having native trees, because native trees generally provide shelter and food for beneficial insects that allow for healthy ecosystems. And without lots of native species that feed those insects, you basically get an ecological desert, which, you know, in landscapes like around Indiana, there aren't really complete ecological deserts that exist right now because we have such diversity. But, you know, each year it's becoming less and less the case. There's more and more invasives moving in. So it's important to bolster diversity in our trees. And it's good to know which ones have the most benefit.
Yeah, so what you're saying is basically trees are like our heart of a healthy landscape. They make sure we're not just ending up with these lifeless spaces. Instead, they keep everything balanced, help our wildlife, and just make sure our whole environment is healthier. So yeah, they're pretty important.
I want to jump in here. It's one of the, when I just think of it, for me personally, wildlife and having trees that create good habitat for wildlife. For me, it's just my own mental health as far as, you know, just looking out the window, seeing birds, stress reduction, just enjoyment. Like that's when I'm talking to clients about, you know, choosing trees to plant, I'm often thinking about them and how having that interaction with wildlife will just increase happiness and stress reduction in their life. That's one of my goals is that. But I'm also big on wildlife, and we can dig deeper into that.
I agree with both of you. Yeah, definitely very beneficial to a peace of mind and having a good environment to grow around, to live around. There's nothing better than looking out the window and seeing a bunch of birds in your trees, other animals that are coming up. I'm pretty fortunate I live in the country and, you know, have cavities that are in trees that provide nesting sites for squirrels and raccoons and then also, you know, lots of raptors that also feed on the smaller birds and the things. So it's just a whole ecosystem, like Ash was saying, that they all kind of intertwine, providing food and shelter and peace of mind to not only yourself but to the environment that you live in.
So we're talking a lot about the trees that are attracting the wildlife. Like, you all have similar like reasons for why the tree selection is important. What trees are some of your favorites and why, and what are they attracting, like,
ooh,
specifically?
I'll go take a stab at this one. I visit a lot of sites, a lot of people's properties, and over the years, and based off my interaction with them, you know, if we're just throwing a species out there, persimmon probably be my top one. I just think of a handful of clients that I talk to who describe what they see when they look out the window. One property that I look at in Brown County, the property is called Persimmon Hill. That's because I bet there's 30-some persimmons varying maturity on this slope leading up to their house, and he often talks about the different amounts of wildlife that he sees. I mean, he sees it all. It's, you know, you think of persimmons, I think a lot of people just think about deer, you know, coming up in the fall, but he sees everything. And a lot of times he'll see multiple things out there at once, but even coyotes, I mean, almost everything loves persimmon, and they can provide a ton of fruit each fall. So it's pretty amazing. Another one for me though is hawthorn. I think that's a tree that, you know, that's the structure of the tree. I planted a hawthorn for my parents, and every year there's either a new nest in there or they'll utilize the same one. It's just because of the protection factor, I think, from raptors more than anything, but they love that that the density.
Is it a specific bird or just varied?
I think it varies. I just visit there infrequently, so it's I don't get to really constantly monitor it. But every year I'm like, yep, they're utilizing it. And they also put up a pretty large fruit, too, that I know that they enjoy.
Yeah, I would say for me, oaks are probably by far, in a way, the biggest species that we have in our environment, in our native environment. We have a lot of different varieties of oaks, but they also provide a tremendous amount of habitat for various birds, and well, primarily for insects. You know, like this tons of caterpillars. I think there was somewhere in the region of 500 different species of caterpillars that live in and around oak trees, and they are hugely beneficial to insects, birds for feeding their younglings. You know, they are one of the strongest trees we have, and they have the biggest spread and provide, you know, shade for your environment that you live in, but also for creatures that live in around them.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have quite a few red and white oak on my 2-acre woods on my property, and this is great to hear. We love seeing wildlife on our property. I know just the other day, I was standing at my kitchen window making a cup of coffee, and a pileated woodpecker landed on a tree on my property, and it was fun. My kid was nearby, and I pointed it out. Just knowing that we're offering space for birds and insects and wildlife, you know, overall, and just healthy environment. Yeah, oaks are pretty majestic, pretty beautiful trees. So, Matt, do you have any stories about oaks or personal feelings or experiences with them?
You know, if you sit there as a kid and you're just watching and looking, first thing you think about when I think of an oak tree is a blue jay just picking up acorns, you know, and I think blue jays single-handedly are spreading acorns, and therefore oak trees, you know, are growing across the forest simply because of that relationship between blue jays and oak trees.
Yeah, no, there's a good author that's written a book called The Nature of Oaks. I recommend you reading it. But he talks greatly about they're the number one species to provide habitat for wildlife. They have the greatest source of insects that live in them. And then, you know, they do provide things, so they don't get an immediate benefit. But, you know, you plant for the next generation. And so, you know, you're providing a longer term longevity because they're longest living oak species. And they provide a long-term benefit rather than just a short-term benefit.
What about you, Ash? Do you have any favorite trees that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I would say when it comes to wildlife benefits, oaks are definitely the champions. Mm-hmm. They definitely provide the most for insects that feed everything else. Not far behind oaks are the willows. I mean, willows are there's tons of different species of willows, mm-hmm. and a lot of insects that specialize on willows, and then cherries, but they've got to be native cherries to wherever you are. Willows and cherries also provide lots for insects. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing to think about is trees that have a tendency towards forming cavities, mm-hmm. so that don't compartmentalize wounds as well, because that provides a lot of nesting space for mammals, mm-hmm. specifically. So some species that provide for sleeping space, especially in like the urban environment.
Yeah, do you have any examples?
Yeah, I would say like silver maples. They grow really fast, but they don't compartmentalize, so they form a lot of cavities. Box elders is another one. You get a lot of cavities in box elders. And then cottonwoods. And the big one is beaches, like most beaches have cavities, I would say.
We almost have to frame this, if you're going to start talking about species, and especially in urban settings, you know, as a tree risk assessor, if people are thinking about, oh man, yeah, I could plant a willow or I could plant a silver maple, you really have to be cautious and think about where you're going to plant these. You're not going to want to plant some of these fast-growing species. A lot of times these fast-growing species are poor compartmentalizers, or they create large cavities or decay pockets. And these are not trees that you're going to want to plant near targets such as homes, vehicles, playgrounds. So the ash is probably stating that these are great species to plant away from homes and targets.
And just for someone who doesn't understand maybe what you're talking about with compartmentalization, it's just get a wound on them and they're just not going to heal as well as some other trees. So they have a higher risk for breaking or causing damage.
Right. Yeah. But I will say, you know, they both brought up oaks as their favorite. You know, most oaks are going to be fantastic to plant near targets because of their wood is very strong. They create great shade, and they're not susceptible to wind, ice, and snow loads and things like that. So that's a whole nother podcast that we could get into is tree selection in general. There's a whole process behind tree selection. You have to be very cautious when planting trees. So you could obviously contact a certified arborist to come out and give you an assessment of your property, and they can help you and guide you through the process of picking the proper tree. But you want to go through the proper process. You don't want to just plant certain trees just because they're good for wildlife. It's more than that. You have to walk through the whole process.
Going back to trees that provide food, what is your opinion on service berries?
Great, great trees. The fruit is very popular in birds.
Yeah, it's one of my personal favorites. Plus, it seems like a good decorative tree for someone's landscape as well.
Yeah, one time, I'll just tell you a story. I was sitting and I was just got done with an assessment of a property, and I was sitting in my car. All of a sudden, a little, almost like a black cloud flew near my car, and I sat there and watched 50 to 60 cedar waxwings just completely strip this service berry clean of all the berries on the tree, and it probably took about 90 seconds.
I believe it. Yeah, my family enjoy service berries, and it's very, very rare do we actually get to like enjoy them, because they're there and then they're gone very quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Every time we've got an opportunity to eat service berry, I'll take it before the birds come and do it.
Yeah.
Service berries are kind of in the top three when it comes to like insects that specialize only on one species. Service berries, elms, and lindens, those are really important to keep like at the population level, keep enough of them in a population to maintain those specialist insects.
What species should people avoid in their yards that might harm wildlife or bring in unwelcome wildlife?
Well, Bradford pear. You know, they're not native here. They're invasive species, but they're also spread really badly around the environment. If you look anywhere down a wood line in the spring, you'll see white-flowered trees everywhere, and they are Bradford pear, spread primarily by the birds eating the fruit and then, you know, depositing them in a natural environment, and they take over quickly. There's also tree of heaven, which is also quite very invasive species, and they spread like wildfire. So those two trees for sure are in our environment, especially in Indiana and around Bloomington, they seem to be a massive problem.
I think there's a lot of discussion that I hear about exotic species and invasive species, and some people are like, well, you know, even if a tree's not from around here, like why would we necessarily give preference to the natives, right? I mean, and we've already talked about it's because the natives actually sustain life here. And any exotic, even if it's not invasive, right? Like when Simon talked about, they're doing lots of damage to our ecosystem. If you get enough exotics, even if they're not invasive and they're not spreading into the forest and clouding out or stealing the sunlight from species like young saplings that are growing, if you get enough exotics, especially in the urban environment, you're just building a desert.
Turns into an absolute dead zone. We did a property where we went in and removed it was 20 acres of Asian bush honeysuckle. And I showed up there first and listened to the client's concerns. And, you know, it was the whole forest floor was nothing but a just mass of Asian bush honeysuckle. And walking through there and attempting to walk through there was one thing. But as I walked through there, you could tell that there was just no was hardly any insects, any wildlife. It just felt like a dead zone as you were walking through there.
That's, I guess, conversation to be had as well, is we're talking about what trees to have in your landscape to promote wildlife and just a healthy environment. But what should we avoid planting in our landscapes that might harm the trees that we want on our property? What's a common honeysuckle, obviously being one, but common landscape plantings or just anything that might cause future damage to the healthy environment?
I think a lot of people have heard of invasives and know that it's not good to plant invasives, but even plants that are just exotic and they're not actively doing lots of harm, like ginkgo trees, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that plant them all throughout a city because they're so hardy, mm-hmm. and they grow well even in really rough locations, like Norway maples. There's a lot of foresters that are still like planting Norway maples. It's not necessary because there are native options that can fill those niches.
Yeah.
And do near as good of a job and still provide benefits.
I might take this a little bit of a different direction, because as we're sitting here talking about this, I'm always thinking about our clients and how I talk to them and try to consider wildlife and their overall goals as far as managing their property. But one thing that I often talk about is dead trees. We get a lot of calls about dead trees. And anytime that I can, I am trying to talk them out of removing dead trees if there is no target associated with the tree, because of the amount of insects and wildlife that will use that as habitat. So when you're looking at your tree and you see a dead tree, first look to see if it could fall and hit anything. If it's not going to hit anything, when it does fail, then I would highly recommend retaining that tree on your property for the wildlife. And then another thing that I often talk about with homeowners is dead branches. Almost every property I go to, I feel like I'm talking about dead branches with homeowners. And I think there's a bit of a misconception with dead branches and trees that people associate dead branches with the overall health of their tree. And sometimes it is a good indication of where the health is, but trees simply get dead branches within their canopy due to the lack of sunlight. And how that associates with wildlife is, birds love to fly to dead branches, and, especially raptors. Those raptors can then sit there and eat, mice or other chipmunks, different things. So as long as there is, again, no targets below the tree, you can retain those branches and just know that it is good for the wildlife. There's been a lot of discussion on forums when it comes to, is it healthy to remove dead branches from trees? And I'm always telling people there's really no reason to remove dead branches. There's very few scenarios where it's necessary, but really should just be looked at from a risk standpoint.
I have the luxury of living on a larger piece of land as well, but we have a back corner where we keep all of any down branches or like sticks or any whatever falls from trees, and just in a pile for wildlife, especially like box turtles love brush piles. So going with that, never just burn a large brush pile. Burn it piece by piece, or you might be destroying a lot of wildlife at the bottom of that brush pile.
Yeah, and the same goes for leaves as well. A lot of the leaves are on the on the leaf litter on the ground. People are so quick to clean up the leaves, just to make their property look more appealing. There's something to be said to retaining leaves, especially over winter, on the ground. It's good for the ground, but also provides a lot of areas for insects in the ground to live, and protect them from some of the cold of our winters. But also provides areas where other animals can then rummage and seek out food that lives underneath the leaves. So if you are going to clean your lawn of the leaves, then it's always good to put them in a pile or deposit them somewhere in another part of your property which is more suitable for that. People will burn their leaves, and it's kind of a bit of a waste of time, in my opinion. Everyone's different, and some people like to keep their property very, very clean, and that's fair enough. You can mulch the leaves, you can chop them up once you've collected them, and then they would decay quicker, and they also don't provides as a big of a pile, but they do provide some nesting habit areas for other creatures to live and hide out.
Sometimes the things we do make our yards look a certain way, but it isn't always what's best for the trees and the soil. Organic matter in our yards is important for the trees and plants to strive and survive. Okay, let's, before we wrap this up, describe to me a perfect planting or landscape if you were given a blank slate in a small city lot and you were trying to promote a high level of wildlife and just personal.
Maybe like a half acre lot.
Eighth of an acre. You literally have the front yard to work with. What would you plant? Very small.
Well, obviously it would stay with small trees, unless you've got the space to have one big tree. But if you could have several small trees, that variety of fruit producers, flowering trees for your ornamental enjoyment.
What would trees. Be your selections of fruit trees?
Serviceberry is a very high one. Redbuds, they're flowering trees. They provide, the aesthetic appeal, but they also provide a lot of nesting habits for habitat.
They're delicious as well. Yeah.
Redbuds?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they're really, really tasty.
What part?
The flowers.
Oh, really? I've never eaten one.
Put them every year on a spring pizza.
Huh.
They're really high in vitamin C.
I never knew that. Pawpaws are one of my favorite fruits, and they really are pretty trees. They generally grow in small clusters, mm-hmm. or if you go to certain state park, like the state park in Brown County has some really big areas that are just covered in pawpaw, and they don't get big. I would plant them in groups. Feel like any species of small trees that you might be appealed to, like certain trees that have flowers, if you like flowers, depending on the color, and then the fruit and trees. I'd probably stay away from crab apples. They are popular with fruit, but there are some disease tolerant species, but they're overplanted and then they are subject to a lot of diseases. So
I'm going to go a different route. I mean, an eighth of an acre, when I think of my clients that have, somewhat small yards, I'm still going to tell them to plant one large shade tree right in the middle, or, pick the best spot. And then, what I would try to do if I lived in a setting like that is have that one large shade tree and then create that that natural understory underneath it with trails, little trails that I could walk along that would have shade loving native perennials underneath it. I would probably even add some lighting in there.
It's a very big eighth of an acre front yard. Yeah. It's got trails.
It's only a 55,
well, you can. You, you can have meander. I'm actually thinking of my front yard. I had about 12 pretty mature trees. And if you are talking, like Simon was talking about planting, and mm-hmm. I want to touch on this because the importance of it, if you do have even a medium or large property, the importance of not planting in a monoculture, not planting one species, which a lot of people do. Developers love to plant, their whole property in red maples, or they line the streets with one species because it collectively can be appealing visually, but for wildlife, it is not the best thing. Each tree is going to attract different insects and therefore different birds and all of that, so making sure that if you do have a medium to large property that you are mixing it up.
You'd also run the risk if there were like a disease or something of losing,
yep.
possibly losing all of it.
Yep. Much like, in Bloomington here, back in the day on Walnut Street, it was lined with elms. And then when Dutch elm came through, they lost all these giant, beautiful, large elm trees. And I would say that it's never fully recovered from it. We've got some nice trees along Walnut, but they're still, it's nothing. If you've seen photos of that back in the day, it was absolutely beautiful. So it is critical to mix it up. You want a diverse mixture of species on your property to attract the wildlife and just to protect your investment with those trees.
Yeah, when it comes to filling a tiny little lot, I mean, it's easy for me to answer because I'm kind of doing this in my yard right now. I got a place about a year ago, and it was pretty barren, so I'm trying to pack a bunch of species into a tiny space right now.
He's going to leave his address for everyone so you can just come and visit him at any time and like assess his work.
Little garden
Stop
tour.
Stop by and look at my overplanted
garden tour
yard.
Garden tour at Ash's house. Yeah.
Every day he comes to work, he's like, yeah, I planted 3 more trees. I'm like, dude, in 20 years, you are going to, it's going to be a forest. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Eighth of an acre, I think I have a strong preference for Eastern red cedars, just because they're so hardy and they're pretty pest resistant, and they do well in our soil, like in our more basic soils around here. And if it's not overly shaded, you know, and we're talking about clay soils, I mean, I think focus more on trees, but I think a lot of people overlook small trees and shrubs, which there's not really a clear definition as to what's a shrub and what's a tree. But I really like elderberry. I would have some elderberry and sumacs and Eastern red cedars. And then any other space, as long as the lot wasn't going to be used at all, then I would just have lots of native wildflowers all around the trees, because those root systems, as they get established, they're going to continue to build the soils and set the trees up for success.
Thank you all. I appreciate all your ideas and comments. Thanks for sharing your knowledge about how trees can benefit and affect so much with wildlife on our properties and within our community.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Thanks for listening to Acorn to Oak. If you enjoyed today's story or learned something new, join us next time as we keep growing tree knowledge from acorn to oak.